the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello, welcome along to the Women's of Football podcast, show number 14. I'm Hamish. I've got Kieran back from France.
Bonjour, my friend, and bonjour to the listeners.
Oh, God, I was hoping that we wouldn't have any more French accents from you.
Can't help it. Can't help it, I'm afraid.
No, you really can't. Right, another jam-packed show this week. Kieran, do you want to kick off and say who interview number one is with today?
Well, I think you should be the one to introduce it, because you did interview number one, so be my guest, my friend.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but whilst you were sunning yourself in Lyon, I was hard at work making sure the show was actually going to happen.
It was raining in Lyon, my friend. No sun whatsoever.
Yeah, whatever. Right, our first guest is Washington Spirit head coach and general manager Mark Parsons, who, of course, had a very good draft day, so he will be talking about that. To continue the Washington Spirit theme, we catch up once again with Jody Taylor, who is slamming in the goals for Sydney FC in the W League down in Australia. And then I'll let you add our third guest.
Yeah, there's obviously been a lot of talk in the WSL about departures from Arsenal ladies, so we thought we might give them an opportunity to have their say. So we've got the main person themselves. We've got Shelley Kerr talking to us about Arsenal ladies and their plans for the coming season.
Outstanding. Right, because of your little trip to Lyon, you better take a back seat for the first half of this podcast. So let's get started.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFpod.
Right, we've got to talk about the draft, and because she was so awesome in the last show, we've got Sarah Gerke back from the Soccer Desk. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, no worries. We've got to talk about the draft. Obviously, Crystal Dunn went first, we all knew that, but let's have a little look at who went where. Who, in your opinion, to start off with, had a real good draft day?
I would say overall, probably Boston. I mean, they drafted six players, which I think was probably the most of any team, and they got some pretty essential pieces because they have quite a few gaps in their roster right now. So I would say the day was definitely most important for Boston, but really there's so much depth in this draft. I don't think any team really came out as a loser. I think they all got players who are going to be important for them next season.
We'll obviously talk about the first pick with Mark Parsons a little bit later on. So let's switch to that number two pick. Kelia Ojai went to Houston Dash, and that's a great signing for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach Waldrum actually said basically from the day he was hired in Houston, they knew that Kalia was going to be their pick, whether that they were the fifth pick or the second pick. That was who they wanted to go with because, you know, she's a great player. She's going to add a lot to the club. But additionally, she has major ties in Houston. Brian Cushing of the Houston Texans was actually at the draft to support his sister-in-law, Kalia. You know, that came as a surprise to pretty much no one. And actually, most of the players drafted in the first round, people had them maybe ordered a little bit differently, but basically everyone had the same nine players going in the first round, so there weren't too many surprises there.
Chicago had the next two. I think they've done pretty well. I've read a lot of good stuff about Vanessa Di Bernardo, and Julie Johnson is another good player as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory Dames had said that they think they got the best defensive and offensive midfielders that were available in the draft, so they're very pleased with the fact that they were able to pick them up. And they also got Haley Brock from Maryland, who has played really well in the ACC. She's kind of a steal to pick up in the third round, and she should provide some power up top for their striking core.
What do you make of Kansas City in at number five, took Cassie Coleman?
I mean, I think that's a great selection. I was a little bit surprised given how strong the Kansas City defense was last season. I think with the departure of you know, their two Canadians, one of which being a major part of their defensive line, I think was why that pick was made. Had neither of them left the club, I don't think Coleman would have gone to Kansas City. So that was a surprise for me.
Was Maya Hayes to Sky Blue another surprise? I saw one prediction that had her going to the Red Stars.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Stars obviously needed some forward talent, and they got that in Haley Brock, so they're not really missing out by not picking up Maya Hayes. And Sky Blue, they just lost Denisha Adams to the Washington Spirit, so not too much of a surprise to see them pick up a striker early.
And what about Amanda Frisby? She was delighted, took to Twitter, of course, to say that she was buzzing to join Seattle Reign.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach Harvey has watched the University of Portland several times, just because of proximity to Seattle. And so a lot of people had her going to Seattle, and, you know, she's such a versatile player that she'll be able to, you know, find a slot in, hopefully, in Seattle's lineup.
You mentioned the Boston Breakers earlier. What four players did they manage to bring in? Oh, sorry, six players, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily I need to list them all, but in the first round, they picked Nikema Zrike, which was an interesting pick because she's Canadian. So she's going to count as an international slot on their roster. And so there were only a couple of internationals selected during the draft because, you know, there's a limited amount of international spots. So to see her go in the first round, it was pretty exciting and shows that Boston really thinks that she's going to, you know, score a lot of goals for them next year, or this year, actually. Sorry.
let's conclude with the Flash. How did they do?
I think Aaron Lyons put it best when he said that they were just looking to add depth. They're not necessarily trying to fill any major roles or think that they have any large gaps. So it's just about creating depth. So you might not see Courtney play as big of a part in the Flash starting lineup as you may see some of these other players play with their new clubs.
You were, of course, there on draft day. Now, there are a couple of head coaches at certain clubs, one of which we'll be talking to a little bit later on. How was it on that day? You know, obviously they're trying to learn on the job, as it were, but how was it on that day? Was it nervous? Was it high octane? What was it like on draft day?
Yeah, the room was electric, partially because it was far too small. So that increased, I think, the level of drama. There was an incredible amount of media coverage there, both local outlets and national outlets. So that was exciting. Quite a few players were there, you know, because it was in Philadelphia. So you have the I-95 corridor. That was terrific. They had their families there. There were fans there. And then you have all of the teams, their staff, and their coaches. So there was quite a bit of drama. There were several trades that actually happened during the course of the draft. Portland was behind several of them. And so it just made it a very exciting event just on so many different levels. So it was great that it was open to the public this year.
I'm glad you mentioned the trades that happened there. I know Tiffany Vimer was one of them. What were the other trades that went on the day?
Yeah, so Portland gave up Nikki Washington as well as a draft pick to get Mana Shim back in Portland, and Riley was very frank about the fact they gave up quite a bit to get her back, but he also said they probably would have given up more because that's how much they wanted her back. Additionally, Portland also sent Tiffany Weimer over to the Washington Spirit in exchange for some draft picks. And then finally, Portland traded with Boston. Boston sent over one of their backup keepers, Michelle Bedos, over to Portland, who Paul Riley actually coached at the youth level. And then they sent over draft picks. So yeah, Portland was kind of orchestrating most of those trades.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah, thank you very much for coming back on the show to talk us through the draft. Let's get the thoughts of Washington Spirit head coach and general manager Mark Parsons on his number one draft pick, Crystal Dunn. Well, Mark, welcome to the Women's Football Podcast. We've got to start with the draft because, as you say, it brought a halt to proceedings, but you must be very satisfied with the outcome.
It was an exciting day, and for us in DC, you know, very, very pleased with how things went. Obviously, we've known for a long time that we'll be picking up Crystal. There was times where we were, you know, not 100% whether that pick was going to stay with us, so when we got that confirmation and know that we'll pick her up, that's great, and that's going to be huge for us. And, you know, that we're picking up Molly and Chester. We know we've got two young players that have been at a program that play great football and under a fantastic coach. So bringing them two in and giving them an opportunity is also important. And then the last pick, you know, trading that to bring in Tiffany, who was a part of part of Portland's championship last year, and you know, very influential in getting them to that final, in, you know, with a good performance in the semi. Bringing her in is going to be great for us, and adds experience, adds quality, adds a great personality, and you know, ticks some boxes. Apart from her ability on the pitch, it ticks some boxes that we had to improve in and around the changing room. The right mentality and things for this year. So all round a great day, and also it was an exciting place to be. The fans were flocking in, and the room was packed. I mean, it looked small in some of the pictures I've seen, but it was a good sized room, and a lot of people wanted to be there and be a part of it. And I think that's massive for these young players, and obviously great for the league.
Absolutely. Obviously, the biggest name out of that group was Crystal Dunn. I would imagine that most of the league was trying to trade for that top spot.
Yeah, there wasn't many serious conversations because I think everyone realised, you know, if they were in our shoes, that they wouldn't entertain anything either. And there was a couple of conversations about a month ago, and made it very clear that, you know, there's not, and I mean this, not over exaggerating, it's just because of the full package that she's going to bring over the long term. There's not a single player in the league, you know, including the US allocations, that we would have thought about switching for that pick. Crystal, you know, she has a long way to go, and I've only been watching her for the last 12 months. I'm not going to pretend I've watched her for 3 or 4 years over a whole college career, but you know, and intensely over the last 3 or 4 months. Watching her performances at UNC, speaking with Anson Dorrance and going down meeting him and trying to get as much info about her and strengths and weaknesses, and almost planning the areas where we can immediately help her improve. And you know, what she's achieved already is out of this world. But the best thing about her, and I haven't found this out personally yet because I've only had a couple of conversations. But you talk to her teammates, you talk to her previous coaches, the biggest strength she has is she's got the mentality, she's got that desire, that passion. Was lucky enough to meet her parents over on Friday, and you can just tell where all that has come from. Two amazing parents, and when you've got a player with that much ability, you're just praying, hoping that the mentality's there as well, because you know that's the part that you know we see the difference in a very, very talented player becoming someone who excites, you know, across the world at this level. So very happy, very pleased. And although she makes an immediate impact for us, we know that she's only going to improve. She's only going to get better and play a huge role for us over, you know, many years and a huge role for the national team, I'm sure.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So we've got to thank Mark Parsons for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast. He's clearly happy with his draft day and some decent additions to the couple that he's already made ahead of next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Washington will be a much stronger team this year. They've obviously had an opportunity to pick higher up in the draft, but you look at the players that they've managed to acquire since last season, like Jodie Taylor. They picked up Tiff Beimer as part of the draft with some trades with Portland Thorns, and they've obviously picked up Rene Cuellar from Seattle, who's another forward. So I think you add that, we mentioned it in the last podcast, to players like Diana Matheson and Laurie Lindsay. And I think they're going to be a lot stronger. And I think they'll certainly be a lot more competitive. But obviously, I don't want to say too much because we do have a part two with Mark, and he does discuss those players in that part.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bit I like about his interview was that he was quietly going about his business, and he certainly is. But up next, we have a player who Mark has added to the Washington Spirit. Jodie Taylor has been firing on all cylinders for Sydney FC, who currently are in the driving seat in the W League out in Australia. So we thought it was about time to get her back on the show. She, of course, featured in an earlier issue? It's like a magazine. In an earlier edition of the Women's Football Podcast, so make sure you check that out. However, a slight warning. And Kieran, don't give me too much of a hard time, but a quick note for all you budding journalists out there, always do your research. Well, Jodie, nice to have you back on the show. We speak to you the day after you put 2 goals past the reigning Ballon d'Or winner. That must be a good feeling.
Yes, it is. Although, she wasn't playing yesterday.
Ah, no way.
I think she's still struggling with an injury. But yes, so it's still really good to beat Brisbane, one of the big rival teams in this league. So big 4-0 win, which is good.
Absolutely, and it's been a good season for Sydney so far. Quite dominant, unbeaten, I believe, as well.
Yeah, we are. We're actually undefeated. I think we've had a couple of draws so far. So so far so good.
And unsurprisingly, you've been among the goals, so you must be pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, I'm always happy to score goals. Could have got more already, but still a few games left.
Well, obviously, the last time we spoke to you, you were playing in Sweden. How has the Australian League differed to that one?
A tough one. I think the biggest struggle in this league, or the biggest challenge, is playing in the heat for me. Most of the games are played at about 35 degrees. Oof. Some are even up to 40. So I think that's a huge challenge. The players are really athletic here. They're just phenomenal athletes. So they're all fit and they're all fast, which obviously you have to kind of adjust your game for that. It's a good league. There's probably a few younger players in this league, but it's definitely developing and it's attracting really good internationals as well.
And you enjoying yourself off the field as well?
Yeah, of course. I absolutely love the lifestyle in Australia. It's one of the big reasons for coming here in the off season. It's nice to enjoy the sunshine away from the pitch. It's a challenge on it, but it's nice to enjoy downtime down at the beach or in the sunshine.
Well, we're all very jealous of you over here where it's raining every day. Obviously, at the end of this season, you will be off to America. Are you looking forward to joining up with Washington Spirit?
Yeah, I am. I'm extremely looking forward to it. That has been a goal of mine for quite some time now, to play professionally in America, and finally it's working out. So obviously I'm still focused on Sydney, still got a bunch of games to play here and the playoffs at the semi and the final, hopefully. But yeah, after that I'll be really looking forward to it.
I'd imagine for you it'd be quite strange, because obviously you're discovery rights were with Seattle, but then you got traded. What was that like for you? I mean, you just not really bothered which team it is, just happy with Washington?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just happy it's all worked out together over there. I think the whole rights, I didn't quite understand what the procedure is anyway, and it all happened quite quickly. So I'm looking forward to getting over there and seeing what it's all about.
You're no stranger to America, of course.
Yeah, I spent quite some time there when I was younger. Went to college out there, and I think I was there for about 5 years in total. So haven't really been back the last few years. So it will be nice to get back out there. Yeah, it's a really good lifestyle, and obviously a really good standard of football too.
We actually have your soon-to-be head coach, Mark Parsons, on the show as well, and he called you the complete forward. Have you been quite impressed with when you've spoken to him? Are you looking forward to playing under him?
Yeah, I am. I didn't really know too much about him. Spoken with a few people who kind of know him from back in England. I think it's obviously a positive that he is English and has a good knowledge of football. But yeah, I've heard good things about him and what he's done with the team already, so I'm just looking forward to it.
We've got to talk about England a little bit. How disappointed were you to have to withdraw?
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed, yeah. A bit unfortunate with the timing, just with the camp being in a non-FIFA window and with the number of games I had here for Sydney, especially because of the Japan tour that we played in, and we missed a couple games during that, and they just happened to fall during the time of the camp. So, disappointed, but it's nothing I can really do. I guess I'm looking on the bright side, and at least I'm playing games over here.
Have you spoken to Mark Sampson much?
Briefly, initially, but not a whole lot. As I said, I think obviously he's going to be taking a look at a lot of players, new faces and old, so I just hope we get another chance.
But you must be quite optimistic about those chances.
Yeah, I guess so. I came back to England, I think, almost 3 years ago now, with a goal to try and get back in the national team, and yeah, it hasn't quite worked out for me. So yeah, just stay positive. I'll see what happens.
Good stuff. Well, Jodie, we think you're going to end up in the England team. Thank you very much for coming back on the show, and we'll speak to you soon.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Always a pleasure to have Jodie Taylor back on the Women's Football Podcast. Interesting there that she...
Hold on a minute. You've got some questions to answer. Nadine Angra, you opened up saying you scored two goals against the current Ballon d'Or winner and she didn't even play.
Yeah.
What happened there?
As I said leading up to that, if you're a journalist, always do your research before you interview people.
I go to France 2 days and it goes to pop, mate. But never mind. Like you said, do research and everything will be fine. But I think Jodie will create a reputation for herself out in America. She's been in phenomenal form for probably a year, 18 months, if you go back to her time in Gothenburg and the stint that she had with Birmingham in the WSL a couple of years ago. I think she's probably in the form of her life at the moment, and I think it's great that she's on the cusp of the England squad. It's disappointing that she had to pull out of the friendlies in La Manga because of her commitments with Sydney, but I'm excited for what Jodie's doing, and I'm glad that she's getting a recognition she deserves, more so because we've been championing her for most of that time, so it's nice that she's being noticed for that.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Now, let's round up the results out in La Manga. An unbeaten start for new boss Mark Sampson. A 1-0 win over the Republic of Ireland, followed up with a 1-1 draw with Euro 2013 finalists Norway. So that's two solid results for Mark Sampson there. Speaking of Mark Sampson, Bristol Academy have named his replacement, and it's Dave Edmondson who takes charge from Melbourne Victory in the W League. Melbourne are flying, as it happens. They are level with Sydney FC at the time of recording, so very much in line for a place in the grand finals at the end of the season. Dave has a pedigree when it comes to bringing through young players, which I'm sure will be music to the ears of Bristol Academy players. So he will take over in the 2014 WSL season, so it will be very interesting to see how well he does. Right, let's switch our attention to the WSL. A couple of transfers to round up. Notts County have been very active of late, signed a couple of New Zealand internationals. Defender Anna Green and midfielder Katie Hoyle have come in. They've also added Scotland's international defender Rachel Corsi on a one-year contract. So a few good signings for Notts County. One in, one out for Liverpool. Louise Fors has returned home to Sweden. She has joined Alta IF on loan until November. With the signing of Jevard Davison, that's a little unsurprising, as you pointed out, Kieran. Good shout. The one in for Liverpool is USA under-23 keeper Libby Stout, who joins from German side Kloppenburg. And she's coming to replace Rachel Laws, I would imagine, who was, of course, on loan last season but has gone back to Sunderland. Arsenal have added Dutch international Anouk Hoogendijk. And we needed to end on Arsenal because that tees us up very nicely for Kieran's interview with Shelley Kerr. Obviously, a lot of ins and outs at the Gunners. And here's Shelley Kerr's view on her transformation of Arsenal.
Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined by Arsenal ladies manager Shelley Kerr, who is celebrating around 1 year in charge of the club. Shelley, thanks for joining us on the show. I wanted to talk to you about a few things. First off, tell us how it's been your first year at the club and how, you know, you sum it up overall.
Yeah, I think the first year has been, it's been a challenge, but been an exciting challenge. Obviously, you know, Arsenal have been a dominant team and a dominant club in women's football, and you know, there's high expectations at the club. But I think when you take everything into consideration, I think we had a remarkable season. You know, we completed the domestic double, winning both cups. We got to the semi-final of the Champions League, and on top of that, we done a whole restructure within the club. A huge part of the success, and we want to continue that success, and we want to invest in developing our young players. So we restructured our reserve team, which we think is the future. And so I think when you take everything into consideration, then I think that the year's been quite an interesting one and a successful one too.
And obviously a busy period for you at the moment during this off-season. Lots of clubs building their squads, as of you. Brought in a couple of players, Casey Stoney, Siobhan Chamberlain, some experienced players that you brought in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that obviously we want to continue our success, so bringing experienced players into the club is really important. I'm a great believer that you have to have the right balance, and for me, I think we've got some of the best young players in the country, and you know, we obviously have got a lot of experienced players as well, so getting the balance right is important. But yeah, I mean, certainly in Casey and Siobhan, you've got a lot of experience there.
How challenging is it? Because you look at clubs around you, they are catching up. Arsenal have been the top club for so long. Does that put more pressure on you and the squad?
I think it's great. I think, you know, we need more clubs to challenge. And I think that, you know, Arsenal are a club that thrive on that. It shouldn't be that you're in a comfort zone. And I think it's great for women's football in general. For Arsenal as a club, we need to move forward. We need to ensure that, you know, we're not just doing the same things that we always do. We need to do more and we need to do it better. And that's what we're trying to do.
One of the decisions that you made when you came in last season was to make Kelly Smith a team member of your coaching staff. How she settled into the role? How pleased are you with the influence that she's had?
I think she's instrumental. You know, Kelly's achieved lots in the game. In my opinion, you know, she's been arguably one of the best players in the world. And she has so much experience, but she has all the attributes of becoming a fantastic coach too. But the downside this year is that we haven't had her on the pitch, and hopefully, you know, that changes this season.
That's one thing I think people maybe forgot about last season, was that you did have such an influential player out for pretty much the whole year. Are you hopeful that she might be able to be a bit more involved this year, or do you see her more taking the role of the coach like she did last season?
Well, the first thing is I'm hoping that Kelly's on the pitch, and she's such a fantastic talent. So yeah, we did miss her last season, but you know, just now in pre-season she's been training really hard, working well, and you know, we're hopeful that, you know, she's more on the pitch than she's off it.
I have to ask, and it would be bad if I didn't. I think I'd be chastised by listeners. Arsenal have been in the headlines a lot over the last couple of months, and it has been for quite a few departures, the likes of Gemma Davison, Kim Little, Ellen White, who are big influential players for the club. I mean, how disappointing is that, and how, I guess, how hard did the club try to keep those players?
Yeah, of course it's disappointing, because, you know, everyone knows that Arsenal have talented players, and, you know, players leave for different reasons, you know, and, you know, I guess, you know, each individual has their reasons, but I think, you know, going forward, we have to obviously bring players to the club, which we've done, and sometimes it can be exciting, you know, bringing new players to the club. So, yeah, I mean, if you talk about Kim, for example, Kim's always had aspirations of playing abroad. And as I say, you know, you would need to ask the players individually on their particular reasons for leaving. But certainly for us, you know, our environment that we provide is a professional environment. We train, at this moment in time, we've been training 4 days a week, you know, sometimes double sessions. We have strength and conditioning programme. So, you know, we're obviously introducing video analysis. So that's important that players have the right environment. And as much as, you know, we're disappointed that the players have left, equally, we're absolutely delighted and excited about the players that we're bringing into the club.
And that's one thing I wanted to pick up on and really clarify. A lot of people, including ourselves, and we may have admittedly got it wrong, have stated that the players have left because clubs like Liverpool and Manchester City and Notts County, which is where the majority have gone, are offering this professional environment of 5 days a week training. But actually, Arsenal already had a similar setup, and I don't think people were quite aware of that, were they?
Yeah, I mean, we have fantastic facilities at Arsenal Training Ground. You know, as I said, you know, previously, this season we probably trained the most. You know, I know that Liverpool trained obviously 4 days, but we've already had the players in 4 days training, and that will only increase. So there is an environment there that there's you know, professional training provided, and that's important. We're in the process of advertising for a full-time physio, so there'll be recovery sessions in there as well. So, you know, as I said earlier, it's important for us as a club that we don't just rest on our laurels, that we move forward and we try to be even more professional in what we are, and that's what we're going to do.
We mentioned earlier you've already brought in Casey, you've already brought in Siobhan. How hard are you working to replace the other players that have gone?
Yeah, well, I mean, we obviously had an announcement this week as well. You know, we've signed Anouk Hoogendijk from Ajax. So, you know, again, she'll strengthen, you know, defensively. And, yeah, I think you'll see another couple of faces come in. And as I said before, you know, it's important that you have the right type of player coming to the club like Arsenal. They need to have the right character. We want players at the club that are available to train every day because we want to become even better. So, yeah, I think you'll see another couple of faces.
You mentioned Anouk there. Obviously, when she played for Bristol in the FAWSL a couple of years ago, she played more of a holding midfield role. For the national team, she plays more of a defensive role. Do you look at her in any one position for Arsenal, or have you brought her in more for her versatility?
Well, I think it's great that players are versatile because it means that you can utilise them in different positions. And, you know, I think Anouk, she's played for the national team, as you mentioned, as a centre-back. So, you know, we'll be looking for Anouk to play in a defensive area. But it is good when you have players that can be versatile.
Looking at another one of your, let's say, stars from last season, Jordan Nobbs, already a player that was well recognised, but probably a breakout season last year, really came into her own, earned England caps. How big a future do you think she is for Arsenal and for England as well?
I personally think that Jordan was one of the best players in the league last season. I think her performances were fantastic. She was very consistent. And I think people forget what age she actually is. You know, she's still really, really young. But I think she's such a fantastic talent. And, you know, she's obviously got an opportunity in the England squad now. And, you know, I think she'll just get better and better.
And looking ahead, big Champions League competition tie against Birmingham City, WSL rivals. Can't not mention the fact that Lyon are out of the tournament. Does that give Arsenal a little bit more of a chance, do you think?
I think always when, you know, the favourites are knocked out, everyone gets a lift because it makes it more exciting. But, you know, I maintain that the women's game is thriving and all the teams are getting better and better. So, and when you get to this stage of the competition, it's tough. It really is. It gets tougher every year. So I think the first thing is that we have to look at the game against Birmingham because they're always difficult games when Arsenal play Birmingham, so that's going to be a tough test for us. But I think the important thing is that we've got some new players in, and we need to ensure that obviously the new players gel and that we're ready to go when that first game comes along.
You're obviously in pre-season now, looking ahead to the league. You've got a league title to try and claim back from Liverpool, haven't you? What sort of goals have you set the team for this coming season?
I think none as yet. You know, I think that when you play the game and when you're involved in the game, everyone wants to win every game. You know, I'm not any different from anyone else. And, you know, we have got a group of players that are winners, and that's important. But as I say, you know, we've got a long history of winning things, and we want to continue that. But we know it's not going to be easy. There's so many teams that are bridging the gap now, and as I mentioned earlier, it should be like that. That's what makes you become better as a player, to play against better players, to play against better teams.
So I guess my final question would be, to those Arsenal fans who are thinking of buying season tickets and are looking to come to Boreham Wood next season, what would your message be to them?
We'll continue to play the way that we've played. We have a philosophy, a playing philosophy. We love to play attractive football. We want to entertain the supporters. And, you know, I think that it's exciting times ahead for Arsenal. You know, we're moving to the next level. We want to have a cohesive infrastructure at the club. And we want to provide entertainment to our supporters. So, yeah, the message is come along and watch us.
Shelley, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really has been great to have you on the show, and we wish you the very best in your Champions League quarter-final and for the FAWSL season coming ahead.
Thank you.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Arsenal manager Shelley Kerr there, and a useful insight, I think, for fans of Arsenal there. And the thing I think that struck you, Kieran, was the volume of training.
Yeah, I think in the past we've insinuated that maybe clubs like Notts County, Liverpool and Manchester City are going to be offering more training opportunities than Arsenal. But I think what was clear from that interview with Shelley is that Arsenal already have a very good training structure in place. They were training 4 days a week last season. Some of those training days were double sessions, and that's clearly going to continue into this year. So they're not behind the other clubs, as may have wrongly been made out by us and other outlets in the past. But I think what that does do is it raises questions as to why some of those players have left. But that's not for us to speculate. They've obviously got personal reasons, as Gilly Flaherty outlined in the last podcast. But I think despite the doom and gloom that surrounded the club, I think they'll be all right. We know of a few players potentially that might be coming in. So if those do come off, I think they'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, a period of transition with the Gunners at the moment, but always a force. Right, we can't have this podcast without talking about your trip to Lyon. I would imagine you had an enjoyable weekend.
It was really good, mate. Yeah, it was my first opportunity to be able to watch club football abroad. I've obviously seen England play in the Cyprus Cup. I went out to Sweden last year for the European Championships. But to be able to go and see what a club game is like abroad, especially with Lyon against PSG, it was first against second. There were 7,500 people in the ground. They played at the Stade Gerland, which is where the men play. And it was just a great atmosphere. And obviously, the fact that Lyon lost at home, it was 57 or 58 straight wins in the league and 87 games unbeaten. And for PSG to go and win there, it was just incredible. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was fully expecting Lyon to win that one comfortably. They won 3-0 in Paris earlier in the season. So I'm probably not going to be welcome back in Lyon, if I'm honest. I'm probably a bad omen for them. But it was a great experience. And obviously, I got to do a couple of interviews as well. I'm hoping that people will have heard our interview with Megan Rapinoe that we did yesterday in Lyon. But yeah, managed to have a couple of interviews after the game. And I will start off with Farid Benstiti, who is PSG coach. And he was obviously delighted. And I asked him what the secret was to beating Lyon.
I think a lot of work, strong work, and to be very conscientious that we are able to do it. But not disorganized, with discipline, with a strong lean our head. Only this, because we have a very, very good player, and they need this victory to think that they are able to do it, and it was the most important thing, I think, today.
So there we go. That was Paris Saint-Germain head coach Farid Benstiti. See, I can do that as well. But come on, mate, we're an impartial podcast. Surely you've got a Lyon perspective.
Of course I did, my friend. Of course I did. And actually, I wasn't expecting to be able to get one, because you wouldn't actually blame them, seeing it was their first defeat in so long. But I did manage to grab a player. And thankfully for us, it was a past guest on the show, Lara Dickenman. And obviously I had to ask her how disappointing it was to lose at home to PSG.
It's disappointing because we're playing at home and we love playing here. We normally don't lose. It's the second time this season we lose. And it's not easy, but I think we started out well. I mean, we had some chances in the first half. Three, four actually pretty good chances to score the 1-0. That would have been really important. I think it would have changed the game. And then we get scored on their almost first chance of the game right before halftime, and that really hurts, because then you go into halftime and you're kind of thinking about that. It doesn't feel good. And yeah, we try to come out and change a little bit what we didn't do well in the first half, and didn't work too well. They defended really well. I mean, I must say that PSG was a good opponent today, and they came out, they played aggressively, and they have really good players. And it's not like we lost to a bad team. We lost to a really good team, and it happens. It's sports, and we just have to remotivate ourselves and just focus on the next game, focus on what we didn't do well today, and I think next time we'll score these goals again. And yeah.
So there we go, Lara Dickenman, to end all talk of your trip to Lyon, because I'm jealous that I didn't go with you. We have to mention that we are dedicating this show to a very special women's football fan. Kieran, I know that you have something to say.
Yeah, not just a special women's football fan, but a friend of mine who I met through following the game a few years ago. Sam Patterson-Sleep is an English football supporter who went out to the World Cup in China in 2007, went to Finland in 2009 for the Euros, went to Germany in 2000. I mean, she's been everywhere. She's been all over the world following England. And sadly, while I was in Lyon, I got to the news that she passed away last Thursday. And obviously, it was devastating for all that knew her, her family, her friends. And if you looked at Twitter, even the England players were all tweeting how sad it was because they all knew her. They all knew her dedication to the game. And it wasn't just her dedication to the game, it was her dedication to her friends and her family. And she was just a very loving individual and just a really, really nice person. She was 38 years old and she's gone too soon. And there's nothing that we can do in terms of showing how much she meant, but I just wanted to do something, and dedicating this show to her and her memory is something that I wanted to do. And I just want to send my best to her friends and her family, and just sort of make the women's football community aware of someone who was really dedicated to following the game when it wasn't as big as it is now. So, yeah, just wanted to dedicate it to Sam.
Absolutely, we can do that. Our thoughts, of course, with her friends and family. So that brings us on to the end of the show. You can contact us by the usual modes. We are on Twitter at WFPod. Our SoundCloud is soundcloud.com/WFPod. You can send us an email, if you wish, at thewfpod@gmail.com. And finally, you should always check out our blog. There's a couple more blogs on the horizon. That's thewfblog.wordpress.com. If you haven't already read Megan Rapinoe's latest blog, it'll give you a little bit of an insight about why she has decided to call time on her loan spell and head back to Seattle. So definitely worth a read there. So Kieran, that's episode 14 done and dusted. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Big thank you to all the guests, Mark Parsons and Sarah and Shelley Kerr and Jodie Taylor, and obviously thanks to Megan Rapinoe as well. Obviously, Seattle broke the news, but we had an interview with her while we were in Lyon about why she's left, and you know, we've got to thank her for giving us that, because it was nice of her to give us her time.
Absolutely. So we will speak again on episode 15.
Au revoir.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.